Welcome, great patriotic friends, to January 11th on Joe's Daily U.S. History Lesson. I'm your host, Joseph DeCristoforo, and one of the reasons why I do this show is because I'm on a mission from Uncle Sam to make history as fun and exciting as one could possibly make a history podcast. And believe me, some days are easier than others to do that. By the way, don't forget to check out my Facebook page at facebook.com/Joe's Daily U.S. History Lesson. And you know the drill. Like, comment, and share. And when I say comment, I'm asking you to get involved. Let me know what you think about today's show. Your questions and comments are highly appreciated, so thank you very much for that. And now on to today's headlines. We'll wish a happy birthday to Alexander Hamilton in sports historical news with the Kansas City Chiefs, Denver Nuggets, and John Elway. All right, so now let's do this. 1755 or 57, we're not really sure. Happy birthday, Alexander Hamilton. He's the guy on the $10 bill. Alexander was born out of wedlock in the Caribbean, back then the West Indies, to Rachel and John Hamilton, who divorced when young Alexander was around 11 years old. Hamilton attended Columbia U, back then it was King's College, and became a vocal supporter of the Boston Tea Party, as well as other insurgencies against the British. After the Revolution started, he became captain of an artillery and earned the respect of General George Washington, as Hamilton fought bravely in the battles of Trenton and Long Island, as well as the British retreat in Yorktown. In 1780, he married Elizabeth Schuyler, daughter of the very distinguished Major General landowner Philip Schuyler. Not that I'm accusing Hamilton of being power-hungry or anything, but since the Schuylers were close to the politically prestigious Livingston family, Hamilton had established a social rank among his people. This gave him a chance to exercise his opinion about having a strong central government. Hamilton wanted the federal government to have complete power over all of the states, and he began writing essays with James Madison and John Jay for the Federalist, which was a heavy influence to this day on interpreting the Constitution. In 1789, President George Washington appointed Hamilton Secretary of the Treasury. He was tasked to come up with an economic program to provide adequate support of public credit. He divided his program into four parts, which I cover in detail on another ep, but basically it goes like this. The first 2 points to Hamilton's program were called reports on the public credit. The Revolution left America seriously in debt, and with phrases written in the Constitution such as implied powers and general welfare, gave Congress the authority to fund the national debt and assume state debts through the newly formed Bank of the United States, which brings us to the third point, entitled Reports on a National Bank. Interpretation of the term general welfare came into play in his fourth report, Report on Manufacturers. Since this is Hamilton we're talking about, this is general welfare on the federal level and never the state level. And it was designed to encourage commercial and industrial development all over the new nation. In politics, President Washington was really hoping the new America was beyond party lines. You know, one side bent on leading the nation this way, and another leading the nation that way. And it didn't take long. National rights versus state rights, France versus England were two big hot topics, and you couldn't have it both ways. France was having a revolution, and Hamilton wanted nothing to do with it, siding with the English during the British-French hostilities. Thomas Jefferson and James Madison had shared Hamilton's federal views during the 1780s, but during the 1790s, this had changed, and the Republican Party, or Democrat Republican as it was formerly called, was born to oppose the Federalist Party. Finally, when enough was enough, in 1795, Hamilton resigned from the Treasury to practice law and continued to be active in the Federalist Party. After John Adams replaced George Washington as President of the United States, Adams kept much of Washington's cabinet. Though highly critical of President Adams, Hamilton used his influence to persuade his cabinet to enforce Federalist ideals. In September 1798, President Adams suffered a humiliating blow to his ego when former President Washington forced him to make Hamilton second-in-command of the army with the rank of Inspector General during the quasi-war with France that was going on. Hamilton and President Adams would openly argue over policy, and in 1800, he threw his support for his political enemy, Thomas Jefferson, who won the presidency over Aaron Burr and Adams. Not for the first nor last time, Hamilton, by the way, would thwart Aaron Burr's rise to power. In 1801, Hamilton was settled in New York and began publishing the New York Post, the same one we have today, which started out as a Federalist paper. When Burr ran for New York governor, Hamilton threw his support for Burr's Republican opponent, who would win. This probably didn't affect the outcome, but it looked at the time like Hamilton again foiled Burr's ambitions. And that would be the last time he did that. The feud between Hamilton and Burr continued to escalate until the duel that Burr won on July 11th, which I go into complete detail, by the way, on my July 11th ep. Spoiler alert, stay tuned. Yes, a very anticlimactic finish to the story of our first treasurer, Alexander Hamilton. He died when Burr's bullet did not miss at the very same dueling spot Hamilton's son fatally lost 3 years prior. Hamilton left behind a wife and 7 children in serious debt that would be paid for by his friends and the writer to the preamble of the Constitution, Gouverneur Morris. Happy birthday, Alexander. Moving on to sports news. 1984, Denver Nuggets beat the San Antonio Spurs 163-155, the highest non-OT scoring NBA game in history. In Super Bowl news, since it is after all that time of year, 1970, Kansas City Chiefs beat the Vikings 23-7. Len Dawson was the Chiefs' MVP. 1987, John Elway executes the drive late in the fourth quarter with the Broncos trailing the Cleveland Browns. They started out pushed all the way back on the 2-yard line at the end of the game. Broncos offensive guard Keith Bishops boldly said, "We got them right where we want them." Really? You're on the 2, you're losing this game, and it's almost over. Haha. But Elway knew what he was doing and drove 98 yards down the field and into the end for a touchdown, tying the game. The Broncos would win it in OT 23-20. And so that, my friends, is going to wrap it up for January 11th on Joe's Daily U.S. History Lesson. Once again, I'm your host, Joseph DeCristoforo. Check out the website, joesdailyushistorylesson.com, as well as the Facebook page. Let me know what you thought about today's episode. Hamiltonians, did I miss anything in that story? What would you care to add? But yeah, let me know what your take is. And be sure to check out tomorrow's show. I'll talk about the International Banana Museum and LA Rams coach Sean McVay. So don't miss that. And in the meantime, thanks for listening, everyone, and thanks for being great patriotic Americans. And we will see you tomorrow.